Good afternoon, fellow constitutionalists, and welcome to the Free For All Friday edition of the Dan Clements Show, a Christian political talk show. I'm your host, Dan Clements, your constitutional warrior, fighting for your right just to be an American. It is May 18th in the year of our Lord, 2018. Remember, we're a hyphen-free, PC-free zone. God is still in control, and He does love you. And I'm broadcasting live now from the Hemlock Studios here in the beautiful central Susquehanna Valley in the great Keystone State. I apologize for the technical difficulties. I don't know what happened. I didn't change any settings, and I was recording on my broadcasting computer on my Audacity. It was recording everything, my mic and stuff like that, but the OBS on my production computer was not picking up the mic, and somehow a setting got knocked off inside of it. I'm like, what in the world's going on here? I think it might have been when I was yesterday, or Thursday, actually. Yeah, yesterday. I was messing around with the new open broadcast suite or studio from Streamlabs, and I think it might have knocked it off. I didn't even think about it. Of course, those things happen, I guess. So I'm about 15 minutes late getting going here, so I appreciate anybody that's out there that has been patiently waiting for this live stream to get on there. Just real quick note here. Hopefully I'll have the weekend to work all the kinks out of it and get Streamlabs OBS set up properly for the show, which means I'm going to be able to put some overlays. I'm not graphically inclined. I really am not. And so I have to rely on other people's graphics, and Streamlabs has a library of free graphics that I can mess around with and stuff like that. And the one thing I like about some of their graphics is I can switch over to a card. I guess I could have made one myself, but they make it easier for you. I can switch over to a card that says, you know, live stream starting soon and a couple other things on it, which I truly love. Plus, I'm going to be researching over the weekend. I really desperately want to connect with the subscribers and listeners to the Dan Clements Show on YouTube, and so I want to do some more live streams in the evening, more than likely on Google Hangouts, but I'm not totally sure yet. The only reason why I'm saying Google Hangouts is because if you want to come in and you have a video camera you want to use, a laptop or something like that, and you want to become part of the conversation, I'll be glad to let you in on that conversation instead of just reading your texts. Of course, I'm not really sure how that's going to work. Streamlabs, and I'm going to do a separate video on this. Streamlabs is really helping out the small channels. Now, I'm considered a small channel because I only have a little over 100 subscribers to the program. However, one of my best videos that I put out, one of my most viewed videos anyway, has over 26,000 views. But that didn't translate into subscribers to the show. I wish it did. I wish I got a tenth of that. I'd be, you know, 2,600 subscribers to the show. But be that as it may, that's where we're at right now with the show. But Streamlabs has allowed me to do some things that YouTube, because of the size of my program, I'm not up to 1,000 subscribers, and I'm not at 400,000 watch time minutes on the show. And I got to go back and read that, if that's a monthly watch time or if that's total overall watch time. I got to go back and read that section. So I am messing around with Streamlabs. Now, OBS, Open Broadcaster, is an open source program, but Streamlabs took it and commercialized it for them. Now, you can still get OBS for free and use that, and there are some hacks that you can put overlays and stuff on OBS, but they just made it a little bit easier for guys that are graphically challenged like myself. So I will be doing a separate video on that, just my experience with it, and try to show you a little bit about what's going on there with that. So that's probably why my audio was not working right now. Like I said, I do apologize. I'm just real excited about this new Streamlabs. The other thing, real quick, and I'll get off that subject because, like I said, I want to do a video. The Streamlabs, OBS doesn't do this, but Streamlabs, I can use my cell phone for a remote control to switch between the scenes and stuff on Streamlabs, and OBS doesn't offer that. Streamlabs built that into the system, and I got the app on my cell phone, and all I have to do is I have to go in and set the whole thing up. And I said, I'm going to be messing with it over the weekend, but I can sit here. It will be, I think the program will be a little bit smoother because I have my soundboard to the right of me, the mouse is on the right of me, the keyboard's in front of me, and when I need to go switch some things around, I need my hands over my right hand over here. You know, it's on this side, everything. And with the app on the cell phone, all I got to do is I can tap on that. I can open and close my mic at will, stuff like that, that I can do with my left hand. It'll make things a lot smoother on the program, which hopefully you won't notice as far as me. Hopefully you'll notice me getting better, but you won't notice the transition as much going over to Streamlabs. And so it's a... It's still a work in progress, folks. I try to keep moving on. I try to increase the quality of the show whenever I can. And when I do that, sometimes glitches. I should have got on earlier and checked to make sure my microphone's working, but I didn't think the Streamlabs OBS would mess with my old one, and it absolutely did. So I just have to remember that for that in the future and everything. So everything's looking good. The stream is working fine now. Everything is going well. I'm just checking to see if making sure the live stream is actually working out here. And I'll let that run for a little bit. Today, I put a title on the show, Democratic Socialism is the Antithesis of Freedom and Liberty. And I already had a gentleman named Bruce in the chat room. The chat room is always open on YouTube. I never close down my chats. I never disable comments on my videos. I'm just not like that. Good, bad, or indifference. And I got a few negative reviews on my most viewed video, but I just took them with a grain of salt. You know, I just think some of them people might be just trolling because they don't have any videos on their YouTube, and I think they're just going around and doing that. Let's see here. Is the stream working? Yeah, it's working. I don't know why it's not working on the preview screen, but it's actually on the stream's coming through. I just wanted to make sure my stream was working. So, this whole week, I have been inundated on my Facebook, because I do follow a lot of people. I don't just live in an echo chamber. I follow people that identify as social democrats, who identify as progressives, who identify as humanists. I follow them. I watch their stuff. Sometimes when I watch their stuff, it makes my blood boil. And the only reason it makes my blood boil is because they're lying through their teeth. They're absolutely lying through their teeth. And the one way that they lie through their teeth is they don't tell the whole truth. Just like, and I'm not going to really get into it today because it's been ad nauseum over Facebook and everything. I'm going to do a short video on this. But when President Trump was talking to representatives from California about the immigration problem, there was a clip taken out of context by the lamestream media where Donald Trump said that these folks are animals. And the lamestream media made it sound like President Trump was calling all illegal immigrants animals. But if you go back and look at the clip, actually get the larger portion of the clip in context, he was talking about that MS-13 gang were animals. But the lamestream media ran with this. And I mean, all the progressive sites, all the social democratic sites that I listen to on Facebook, and I have tagged on my bookmarks on my browser, my internet browser, all those, every stinking one of them, ran with that story like the lamestream media, and they're the ones complaining. I guess it was about a month ago where Sinclair Broadcasting put out this memo. This is what all the newscasters need to be talking about. And they were talking about, oh, you talk about collusion in the news. And I'm like, well, you know, Sinclair Broadcasting actually owns those news stations. They can tell them what to do. You know, as long as everybody shouldn't have got upset about it. You know, if I owned a bunch of companies and one of them is sent out the same message, I have that right to do so. It's not collusion. It's something totally, totally different. But they were just getting back to the point about President Trump. And his comments about MS-13 was totally taken out of context. And that's what makes my blood boil. Then you go back in there and you correct these people. Well, these are, you're just a Trump troll, you know, Republican, you know, whatever name they want to tag to you. Not even trying, not even taking a few seconds, which all it takes to go look at my YouTube site or go over to my Facebook site or my Facebook page for the show and see who I am. I'm not a Republican. I am not a Republican. I got away from the Republican Party back in 2007 and joined the Constitution Party back in 2007. Pennsylvania now has the Constitution Party on the national ballots, you know, when we, you know, for like national elections for like representatives and senators and the president. We're on there. They just got ballot access down in North Carolina. So we are, the Constitution Party is working very hard to get ballot access to all these states, and they're going to continue to do so until they get ballot access on as many states as we can. You know, they want to get well above 40. You know, they'd like to get all 50, but that may not happen right away. But they want to get well above 40. That way they have a statistical, I get my tongue around my IT so I can see what I'm saying, chance of winning the presidency in the Electoral College. Because in the presidency of the United States and the Republic, in our republic, it's the Electoral College that counts, not the popular vote. Because the president, this is one thing, I want to go off on this little tangent here because I'm talking about democratic socialism. We are not a democracy. We are a type of little d democracy, but we are not a big D democracy. But that's what democratic socialists, progressives, humanists want everybody to believe. The lamestream media wants everybody to believe that we are a democracy. And because they've said it so many times, people believe, well, yeah, we are a democracy, and every aspect of our republic should be democratic. And it is as far as democratic processes, but the founding fathers, and I've been doing a lot of research on this, and I was always of the opinion that the founding fathers set up the Electoral College because they distrusted democracy so much. And although some of the founding fathers and the framers of the Constitution thought this way, that wasn't their driving force with the Electoral College. Their driving force was, look, the people set up, the people of the colonies, when they sent the representatives to Philadelphia and sent King George the Declaration of Independence, fought the Revolutionary War because King George wasn't going to let the colonies go without a fight, fought and won our independence, set up Articles of Confederation that didn't work for our colonies, so there are states at the time. So the states sent representatives back to Philadelphia and said, either fix the Articles of Confederation or start over. Well, they couldn't come to an agreement on fixing the Articles of Confederation, so they scrapped them and started off afresh with a constitution. And part of that constitution was, and remember, and this is something the lamestream media, democratic elitist teachers, instructors in high school and colleges and stuff like this, they teach democracy. That's all they teach. Mob rule, 51%. And the one thing they never teach is sovereign individualism. The people, after the colonies won their independence, the people turned the colonies into states. Then the people sent representatives to Philadelphia to create the federal government. To create it. And then federalism, it's called, with the states. Each state was be guaranteed a Republican form of government, and that's federalism. The states in Article 1, Section 8 bound the hands of the federal government. The states created a federal government and only gave it so many enumerated powers. So we the people forgot all about all this, and we're not being told. Our liberal educators aren't educating our children, and adults aren't educating themselves on the Constitution. When they hear the word Constitution, their eyes glaze over and say, oh, that's just a... And this is a standard argument. It's so standard that it's akin to indoctrination that they say. That's just an old antiquated document. It is no good for today. And they don't go, they're intellectually lazy and they don't go any further than that. Just like with me, they're intellectually lazy and won't see, you know, because when I'm on Facebook, I don't hide my name. My name's right out there. And a lot of times I'll post through my show page so it shows up as the Dan Clements Show. Click on it. You'll read what I'm all about. That I'm a I'm a constitutionalist. I'm a member of the Constitution Party. I have a lot of libertarian leanings. Not all, but I have a lot of libertarian leanings. I'm for freedom and I'm for liberty, more so than anything else. And so when the states got together and created a federal government, the one thing the Founding Fathers wanted when it came to Article 2, the presidency or the executive branch, they wanted to make sure that all the states had equal representation in electing the president of the United States. And that's what, and I've talked about the Electoral College before on the show, but that's the reason why they have the Electoral College and not the president by popular vote. But see, all these progressive democratic socialists out there, they think it's unfair. Oh, Hillary lost the presidency because she had the popular vote, even though she didn't win the Electoral College. So that's such a travesty. That's such an injustice in the country. It isn't funny. But the problem is the Constitution says and talks about the Electoral College. I talked last week a little bit about this, that Connecticut signed on to the popular vote compact by these other states, where what they're going to do in order to assign the electors, they're going to wait till after the total election's over and see who won the popular vote, and they're going to give the whole slate of electors in there to the person who won the popular vote. Well, there's two things wrong with that. One, and I talked about this last Friday, that that's unconstitutional. And two, there are lawsuits already pending, already being starting to be filed against these states, that these electors are not being appointed the right way. They're not being appointed the right way, and this winner takes all is unconstitutional. Remember, the Constitution is a limiting document, and therefore any statements in that document is limiting in nature also. And all it says in there that the states will select the electors. And how do they select them? Well, this congressional district was won by this candidate. This one was won by a different candidate. And at the end of the day, when all the tallies are done, they just look here and they give this candidate their districts that they won. They gave this other candidate those districts that the other candidate won. And whoever has the most district get both senators. Now, if there happens to be a tie, then they split the senators. That's how originally most of the states did it. But we had, after the Progressive Era, everything was thrown out the window. We had the 17th Amendment where we got rid of the states, legislatures, and governors appointing the senators to represent them at the federal level. Oh, the progressives are like, that's not democratic. We need the people to vote for the senators also. And the problem is we the people already have direct representation in Congress. That is our representatives. We live in, everybody in the United States lives in a congressional district except for Washington, D.C., the capital of the nation. But every other state has districts. Everybody lives in a congressional district. We have direct representation. After the 17th Amendment was shoved through and ratified, the states lost their representation at the federal government. Because what democratic socialists, humanists, and progressives, they look at government as God. They look at government as the highest authority in life. Because a lot of those folks are Gnostic at the minimum and anti-theist or atheist at the most, especially humanists. Humanists, there is no God, can't prove that there's a God, even though there's evidence abounding not only in Scripture but out in nature and everything, but I'm going to leave that aside. So their God is government. Their God is government. And so everything that's done should be done to the benefit or the furtherance of governance and the government that, that they want to give this authority over to. And so when I say that democratic socialism is the antithesis or it's the total 180 degree out of freedom and liberty, it's true. When you talk to these guys, we're going to talk today a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about Cecil Richards at Planned Parenthood giving a human rights award. Are you kidding me? I don't understand that. This woman has. I have to go back and research. This woman's been in charge. The CEO of Planned Parenthood has been directly responsible for the killing of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of babies in the womb. And she's getting a human rights award. And then we have folks. We talk about universal health care a lot on this show, and I talk about a lot on Facebook and Twitter, Gab and Minds.com. I'm on four social networks, actually five, but the one, WeMe, I'm on there. It's okay, but I don't like the structure of it. I really don't. I wish it was more, because I'm so used to Facebook and Twitter, I wish they were more like that. And that's what Gab's AI and Minds.com has done. They made the interfaces as close as possible to Facebook and Twitter, and they're still tweaking them all the time. But anyway, I'm on four social medias, and I'm discussing these things all the time. The one thing that I've always asked the progressives and the social Democrats when it comes to universal health care is, can I opt out? Can I opt out? And they look at me like, well, why would you want to opt out? Well, that's my business. I shouldn't have to give you a reason why I want to opt out. I don't like it. I want to opt out. It's just as simple as that. Social Security. If I want to opt out, I should be able to opt out. There shouldn't be no questions asked about it. But when you say that to them, they come up with some of the most ridiculous excuses. Well, you know, if that happened, then it wouldn't be universal health care. I said, I should be able to opt out, and any tax dollars that's taken from me and my personal income tax should not be allowed to be spent on healthcare. I should be able to take those tax dollars and put it into a medical savings account for myself. And I'm called selfish, I'm called unloving, uncaring, all sorts of things, even though I just want the freedom and liberty to make those decisions for myself. And see, that's what is the antithesis here. That is what the antithesis here between democratic socialism and freedom and liberty. Democrats, Bernie Sanders in particular, universal job plan. Bernie Sanders wants to give away the store, free this, free that. And right there, when he calls something free, he's lying, because it's never free. Someone has to pay for it. Somebody absolutely has to pay for it. When you press them on that, well, that's what taxes do. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's what taxes do. So what you're telling me is the taxpayer is the one actually footing the bill. So it's not free. Someone's left holding the bag. Now, it may be free to the individual that's getting it, but it's not free. It's not a program, and there is no cost to it. And that's what, but when democratic socialists like Bernie Sanders and Hillary and these other Democrats out there, when they talk about universal health care, when they talk about a universal job plan, talk about universal education, you know, that the government, you know, there should be free university for everybody. When they talk about that stuff, they never get down to the brass tacks and tell you what's going on here. Who's actually footing the bill? Now, when it gets back to healthcare, I have an article in here we're going to get into about how the healthcare in Canada is a colossal government failure. The UK, the HHS, is failing. And I still have people pointing to England. Well, that's the greatest healthcare system in the world because it's a single payer. And I'm like, it is failing. Last fall, November, December, they had to cancel, coming into the beginning of this year, they had to cancel some 50,000 surgical procedures because they just couldn't afford them. They had to make the people wait because they were out of money. They were absolutely out of money. Because when you give something away for free, you'll find out exactly how many people are going to actually come and use it. Because they're too lazy to go out and get it on their own. Or they're too indoctrinated to think outside the box. Now, I don't mean to bring my son into this. Me and my son every now and then. This last time he was up for Mother's Day, I promised my wife that I would not get into politics. But my son was saying something about to my wife that he was tired every time we get together, we talk about politics. So I was keeping my mouth shut. I was being a good husband and a good father, adhering to the wishes of my wife. And my son started getting into this stuff, and I know he was goading me a little bit. And I looked at my wife, and she sort of shrugged her shoulders, so I went in after it. And I don't know where my son got this indoctrination. It had to be school. He's a part of a union. He hangs around socialists all the time. As far as I'm concerned, if you're part of a union, a work union or a teacher's union, whatever, you're a socialist. You are a dyed-in-the-wool socialist because you adhere to that type of sociology, or that type of mindset. And it's maddening, the inaccuracies that they teach. We got it real quick here, and this has to go with the whole argument here, the whole show here. He was trying to tell me that the unions, well, he didn't actually say it right at first, but he was talking about 40-hour work weeks and weekends and stuff like that. And I said, yeah, isn't it a great thing that Henry Ford started that? I thought he was going to come out of his chair because for some reason he's against capitalism. And I got after him about that before. I said, if you are against capitalism, why do you have a cutting-edge smartphone? His smartphone doesn't use regular cell towers. It uses wireless networks that are all over the place, and it works very well. I said, why do you have cutting-edge technology in your smartphone? You have cutting-edge technology in some of your firearms you own, in your home computers, and yet you're against capitalism. How in the world do you think those things came about? It wasn't because of socialism that the modern technological age came about, not hardly at all. It was free market capitalism that brought these things about. And yet these social democrats will sit in Starbucks on their iPads using free Wi-Fi from Starbucks to complain about the evils of capitalism when they're actually enjoying those evils of capitalism. And so it's just, again, the lies that are being told on the left by the left. That's what hits my buttons all the time, is because the lies they want to perpetrate. It's just like, and I didn't want to, it happened too late this morning. I didn't want to try to incorporate in the show today, but there was a couple, well, the one this morning was down on one of Donald Trump's golf courses, country clubs. Guy went in the lobby and started shooting the place up and screaming Trump obscenities. And you should have seen some of the, because like I said, I follow these other folks on Facebook and Twitter and stuff. You ought to have seen the gross vitriol that was coming out of this. Oh, too bad Trump wasn't there. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. First off, that tells me they wanted that gunman to die, because if Trump was there and he got in there and did that, Secret Service would put him down. So that tells me they wanted him to die at the hands of another individual. And they also wanted the president assassinated. That's sick. That's gross. That is sick and that's gross. And it's just, it's unreal what's going on out there. We had a school in Illinois that the resource officer, if I got the story right, off-duty police officer, was his resource officer at school. This kid came in with a gun and he stopped him, shot him in his shoulder and put him down, and no one else was hurt. But I was looking in the lamestream media that day and the day after, and barely a mention of it. Barely, because it doesn't follow their narrative. It doesn't follow their socialistic, progressive humanist agenda. And that agenda is an antithesis to freedom and liberty. It's polar opposites, 180 degrees out. Doesn't work. It fails everywhere. There has never been an example of socialism that has worked in the history of the world. That sooner or later they ran out of the people's money and the country went to hell in a handbasket. And Venezuela is a perfect example. And you want to see the sidestep shuffle that these democratic socialists, these progressives and humanists go through to try to claim that Venezuela is not the most perfect example, when it is the exact example of what happens when you allow socialism to take over your country. Hugo Chavez started it. Maduro is completing it. And the way things are going over there, I would not want to be Maduro, because the people, I think, are going to get, they're not, I guess they're not there yet. I'd already be done past it. But I guess the people aren't there yet, but they're getting there. And once there's a tipping point that happens, either they're going to get Maduro or he's going to be President Maduro in exile. And hopefully they get back to some rational thinking on, this doesn't work. We need to get back to where it was pre-Hugo Chavez, to where we were actually and maybe even go as far as becoming a republic. And that's one thing I don't understand in the world. Why countries don't look at the example of America and say, why can't we do that here? We talked a little bit about that on the show Friday too, last Friday, about how our Republican form of government needs moral people in government. And if we don't have those moral people, then the Republic is not running the way it's supposed to run. And we have so many immoral people in Washington, either in directly elected politicians or the bureaucracy that they created. So many immoral people. Because all you hear is, not every person, but the vast majority of things you hear coming out of the mouths of people in government, in the bureaucracies, are lies. Just flat out, in your face, lies. And it used to be the job of the lamestream media to point these lies out. Now, as Mark Levin calls them, they're the Praetorian Guard of the government and the bureaucracy. They're not the antagonists anymore. And so since they're not the antagonists anymore, a new Main Street media, a new media on the internet, which some liberals, some democratic socialists, progressives, humanists, are starting to call them the intellectual dark web. And I thought that was funny when I read the article out of the New York Times. I'm going to try to do a video this week on that. Just, the article is just ridiculous. You know, just ridiculous. You know, they call us the dark web. You know, when everything that the person at the New York Times accuse of these folks being on the intellectual dark web, these folks, they don't hide anything. Their opinions, their views are right out in open sight. Stefan Molyneux, Jordan Peterson are two guys I respect immensely. Don't agree with everything both of them say. There's not a lot I don't agree with, but there's a few points I disagree with them with, and that's fine. But they're out in the open, and they get harangued and harassed so much because people are unwilling to do their own research. And I'll bring it full circle back to me. People harangue me, abuse me online, call me all sorts of names, and that's fine. You know, because sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me. Do I get a little mad about it? Yeah. Do I respond? Yes. But my responses are usually measured because I want to make sure, first and foremost, that my Christianity is showing. I can respond without being hateful or mean or personally attack to people. I can't say that for the other side, but I'm not going to do what someone does to me. I'm going to treat people how I want to be treated, like the good book says. And it only takes, a couple clicks on Facebook or Twitter to go read my little blurb and find out who I am. And I'm not who people think I am, especially those on the social progressives, the democratic socialists, the social humanists out there. Just, they bother me to no end. They really do. All right, enough to do about that. Let's get on with the program here. Today's daily Bible reading comes out of the book of Ephesians, chapter 2, verses 19 through 22. Now, therefore, You are no longer strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens and saints, members of the household of God, having been built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together, grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. Now, the one thing I want to point out here, and this is something that a lot of quote-unquote Christians get wrong, is especially the Catholics and some other, I think Episcopalians might be along the same line. They look at the building and the auditorium, especially in the building where the pulpit is and everything, they look at that as a sanctuary, as holy ground. As they look at that, and there's a lot of denominations out there do the same thing. They look at the church building as being the church, but it's not. If you look at the Greek word in the New Testament for church, it's called ekklesia, or it's pronounced ekklesia. And all it means is God's called out, or the called out people. When the people assemble together, that's the church, not some building. I mean, the people could gather down by the river every Sunday and meet down there and worship God and praise him. That would be a church, because it's the gathering, it's the ekklesia, God's called out, that are gathering together. And that this is what Paul's talking about. This is what Jesus, or what Paul's talking about when Jesus is the chief cornerstone. He's the cornerstone. You had matter of fact, even in modern bricklaying, you have a cornerstone where you sort of take everything off of that. If you don't have that cornerstone perfectly level and squared, the rest of the wall is going to be unsquare and won't be level. It'll take a lot of work to get everything back in level. And the way they used to do it back then, they didn't fit things with mortar. The stones were fitted, so they were hand-hewn and everything to fit perfectly, and the cornerstone had to be perfect. And that's what we have here. Today's quote meal comes from A.W. Tozer. He says, I think that most Christians would be better pleased if the Lord did not inquire into their personal affairs too closely. They want him to save them, to keep them happy, and to take them off to heaven at last, but not to be too inquisitive about their conduct or services. Very, very important we think about that when we're thinking about our service to God and how we live our lives, how we live our daily lives. Now, this is one thing here that I want to get, let's see here. The short Bible lesson today, I think it's a good one here. I really do. It's out of Apologetics Press, and it's unlike naturalists, you creationists have a blind faith. Now, I want to jump down here real quick. we don't. But we don't have a blind faith. We really don't. In order for a belief not to be blind or irrational, it needs supporting evidence. While the creationists do not claim to hold direct observable evidence of God, since we cannot taste, touch, or see, hear, or smell him, the indirect evidence, a legitimate source of scientific evidence, is overwhelming. What supporting evidence do creationists put forth? A thorough treatment of this subject is outside the scope of this article, but hundreds of articles and books deal eloquently and credibly with the subject. And Apologetics Press, there's a link in this, I'll put this up on the show notes page after the show, is a really good source for this type of evidence. In short, the creationists argue, among other things, that, one, the available evidence contradicts the atheistic model, which logically leaves theism the creation model. Two, the fundamental evidence that contradicts the naturalist model supports the contradictions of the creation model, which never contradicts the scientific evidence. Which supports the contentions of the creation model, which never contradict the scientific evidence. Three, the existence and teachings of the laws of science demand a non-material, uncaused cause for the universe. Four, there are numerous natural evidences in the universe that exhibit the characteristics of intent, purpose, and complexity, which indicate a mind behind them. Such attributes testify to the presence of intelligent design, which implies a designer. Five, objective morality exists, which implies a higher law that transcends mankind, which in turn demands a supernatural author. Now, on that note alone, I was reading, I've been doing some studying on objectivism, and I actually have an article that I'm writing up and trying to rebut from a senior fellow at the Ayn Rand Institute, who totally, and this blows my mind too, intellectuals are lazy sometimes. They take the standard line on religion or Christianity and they run with it without ever examining it themselves. I shared a meme yesterday. It had a guy with a pair of binoculars that had tape over the, or the caps on, or tape. It looked like tape, but it might have just been the caps on the binoculars. And it says atheists saying that they can't see any evidence for creation or the existence of God. They're blinding themselves because although they're intellectually curious in other aspects and other fields, they don't want to see the evidence for a designer. They can't fathom that. They just cannot countenance that there is a God. And number six, a book exists that contains certain characteristics that can only be explainable if it is what it says it is, the word of the Creator. And I've used examples out of the Bible time and time again. Isaiah talking about how the earth is a sphere. Well, what's a sphere? It's a ball. Well, how did he know that? Back when Isaiah was here, they were just now starting to think about those type of things. How did Isaiah know this? Isaiah was not a mathematician or anything. It had to be revealed to him. In the book of Psalms, it talks about the rivers of the ocean. And Magellan, he was sick at one time, and he asked for the Bible, and he was reading through that, and he saw that in the Bible. And guess what Magellan found after he got better and started and did his circumnavigation of the globe? Rivers of the ocean. How did the psalmist know that? How did he know that? It had to be revealed to him. And that's just one of many things. That's just one of many things. So I don't want to dwell on this too much, but faith is not, and I hate people, I don't hate the people, I hate the saying that people talk about a blind faith. My faith in God is not blind. It's based on evidence. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Did I see creation? No. Is there evidence that creation happened? Yes. Did I see the flood? No. Is there evidence of a global flood? Yes. There's a lot of evidences that are out there. Even though I didn't see them directly, it's the evidence of things not seen. And this is, again, when we talk about the naturalist, when we talk about the atheist, when we talk about the evolutionist, theirs is a blind faith because it's not based on evidence. Not at all. And a Christian's faith should not be a blind faith. A Christian's faith should always and forever, forever be based on evidence. Not just because I told you, not just because somebody else told you, because you researched it for yourself, you went and read these things, got some good books on the evidences in the Bible, especially the evidences in the Bible, and read through those. I have known more atheists who tried to disprove the Bible that were converted by the Bible than I know of Christians who went to be atheists. I know there are some that do, but very, very few. And the ones that I know that said, well, I was a Christian growing up, they tell you what they were, and they weren't really a Christian. They were in a denomination that wasn't teaching or rightly dividing or rightly handling the Word of God. They were teaching falsehoods. So a person's faith cannot be based on falsehoods. So I'm gonna leave that there. I think some people might think, well, Dan, you're getting a little bit preachy there. And I'm like, well, yeah, I could be. Could be getting a little bit preachy there. But, you know, I think it's very, very important. Now, getting back to what we were talking about here, Planned Parenthood's Cecil Richards given Human Rights Award, and this is by Melanie Arter, posted May 17th at cnsnews.com. Well, I saw this. This just popped up today on CNS News, and this wasn't really going to be a part of the program, but I seen it. I just had to add it to it because it just, stuff like it just burns me up. Planned Parenthood President Cecil Richards was given the Hubert H. Humphrey Civil and Human Rights Award by the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights at the dinner held in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday night. In its latest annual report, Planned Parenthood said that it did 321,387 abortions in fiscal year 2016, and then in the year that ended on June 30th, 2017, it received $543,700,000 in government health service reimbursements and grants. So our taxpayer dollars are going to pay for abortions, whether we like it or not. Organizations that belong to the conference that gave Richards the award include, among others, and folks, I just wanted to read this list. This is, I'm laughing because it's so funny. It really is. AARP, which I'll never be a member of myself. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. The American Civil Liberties Union, that's the ACLU. The American Federation of Government Employees, the American Federation of State and County Municipal Employees, the American Federation of Teachers, the American Islamic Congress, American Postal Workers Union, Amnesty International, Children's Defense Fund, Common Cause, Families USA, Human Rights Watch, International Brotherhood of Teamsters, NAACP, the National Bar Association, Newspaper Guild, Open Society Policy Center, the Sierra Club, and the United Farm Workers of America. Now, that Open Society Policy Center is a George Soros-funded policy center. These groups here are so left of center, you almost can't see them. Now, the one thing I haven't done, and I made a note here because I want to look this up, because there's some Islamic folks that are mixed in here. I haven't heard or haven't read anywhere where Islam either approves or forbids abortion. I don't think it approves of it, and you don't hear about abortion clinics in Islamic countries. Of course, you don't hear feminists here in the United States protesting Islam and the treatment of women in Islam. That's a whole other story. And I'm going to try to find out and get back with you on that. I really am, because that just boggles my mind that there's Islamic American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. And it just on down there, the American Islamic Congress. Now, the only reason I can think of that Muslims and Islam would be all for abortion here in America is because we're killing off more than a generation. 60 million babies have been aborted since Roe v. Wade. That's a lot of babies, folks. That really is. That's more than a generation of babies that have been killed in the womb. And I don't let women get away with this argument. It's my body. You stay out of my uterus, my womb, because it's none of your business. I'm sorry. Whether you wanted to or not, you got pregnant. And I'm not talking about rape, and I'm not talking about incest. That's a whole other issue. I'm talking about just having casual sex either with your partner or your husband, and you didn't take steps to prevent a pregnancy like birth control, like a condom or IUD or something like that, birth control pill, which there's some controversy about that, but I don't want to get into that either here right now. And you got pregnant, but it's inconvenient for you to be pregnant this time. So what do? You go have an abortion. You don't even think about, well, you know, it's inconvenient for me at this time, but, you know, there's people out there can't have babies and they're looking to adopt. We'll just take it to term and we'll put it up for adoption. That hardly is ever thought about. At least it's not promoted in the lamestream media or in the social democratic culture that we have today. You know, and I do call it a culture of death from the Democrats. But it's not just a blob in your belly. It is a baby. It's the only thing it can be is a baby. And just because it's inside your body doesn't mean that baby doesn't have rights that need to be protected. And that's where I fall down on abortion. But again, I don't want to get too far on my soapbox. I just wanted to show you that this is something that Democrats in Congress, some Republicans, definitely humanists and progressives, they applaud this. They applaud this behavior. And this is the antithesis of freedom and liberty. What about the freedom and liberty of that unborn child in the womb? You never think about that. They never, ever think about that. Matter of fact, Planned Parenthood and all those that support abortion, they fight tooth and nail against ultrasounds of the mother and showing the mother that that is a baby in the womb, because they know once, and not in every case, but the vast majority of cases, once a mother sees that, they change their mind about abortions. There's been studies done on it ad nauseum out there, but you never hear from the mainstream media. You just won't hear that. So, again, this is something that it just goes totally 180 degrees out from freedom and liberty. Universal health care is another thing. There's an article by Lee Friday over at Mises.org that was put out April 28th of this year. Universal health care in Canada, a colossal government failure. Tom Kent was a senior government policy person in Canada when the Medical Care Act was passed in 1966. He describes the government's objective. The aim of public policy was quite clearly and simply to make sure that people could get care when it was needed without regard to to other conditions. After half a century, the government has still not honored its commitment, and its performance declines with each passing year despite increasing spending. Furthermore, the government made it illegal for citizens to pay private parties for the health care which the government fails to provide. Waiting, waiting, waiting for a doctor. According to the Fraser Institute survey, Fraser Institute is, I think, I believe them to be top-notch when it comes to surveying these things in healthcare, whether insurance or healthcare. But according to them, for medically necessary treatment, the median waiting time for patients in Canada from referral by a general practitioner to consultant with a specialist and then the date of actual treatment was 21.2 weeks in 2017. This year, 2017 wait time, the longest ever recorded in the survey history, is 128% longer than in 1993, which is just 9.3 weeks. Now, real quick here. Research has repeatedly indicated that wait times for medically necessary treatments are not benign inconveniences. Wait times can and do have serious consequences, such as increased pain, suffering, and mental anguish. In certain instances, they can also result in poor medical outcomes. Transforming potentially reversible illnesses and injuries into chronic irreversible conditions and even permanent disabilities, or even death. From a 2014 survey by the Fraser Institute, Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada have noted that patients in Canada die as a result of waiting lists for universally accessible health care. And the same thing is happening over in England. It is imploding in England, and Canada isn't too far behind imploding. And this is what Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and the Democrat Party, and the humanists, and the progressives, and the social democrats in America want to bring here. I was watching on a YouTube the other day. Her first name's Ashton. She does a YouTube video. And she was talking to the socialist Sailor Moon. Now, this Sailor Moon, I don't know what her deal is, but she's supposed to be some type of intellectual socialist. And quite honestly, I think she's dumber than a rock. And that is a personal attack. And I'm just saying, from her responses and how she was acting, I think a rock would be smarter. All she cared about, well, we just need universal health care. You know, we need the government to pay for it. We need universal health care. And the government is the last entity that needs to be in on this. And we have proof. That's just it. We have a body of evidence that universal health care does not work. It actually makes the situation worse. And yet they want to bring it to America. Oh, we're not like the rest of the industrial world. You bet your bottom dollar we're not like the rest of the industrialized world. We're better. America is better in so many ways. Not always, but we're better in so many ways than the rest of the industrialized world, because originally, when we were chartered, when we were created, when the United States federal government was created, when we won our independence from Britain, we were freedom, liberty-loving Americans that knew no boundaries except keeping the government inside its chains. And even back in our founding and framing era of the country, we had folks like Alexander Hamilton that was a big government guy. And he should have been run out of town on a rail. I'm sorry. That's just my opinion. He should have been run out of town on a rail. He would be all for, in my opinion, he would be all for universal health care. And even back then, they had an issue of who was going to pay for these sailors. I can't remember the complete story, but something about sailors were getting sick and then they're, you know, needed health care and stuff like that. And they wanted the government to pay for it. And some of the Congress folks in there, some of the framers of the Constitution, put their 2 cents worth in it. Said it's not the government's proper role. Now, if the state wants to step in and do something about it, a state's more than it's legal for the state to do. If the state wants universal health care for their state, there's nothing the federal government can do to stop them. There's nothing any other state can do to stop them. But guess what's going to happen to that state? And the same thing happens in Canada. People come down from Canada to get health care down here. Pay for it out of pocket, even though they made it illegal up there. What the government in Canada doesn't know won't hurt the citizens. And there's people come down here. Listen to Steven Crowder. He's from Canada. His mom's from Canada. They know the horror stories up there. They're not lying to you. They know the horror stories. The people lying to you are the democratic socialists that want to bring you universal health care. These socialists in the country that want universal health care, but they can never articulate the benefits of it. And I want a free market health care. All the evil corporations, they'll be the ones that take over. I'd rather have the government. That's the argument they use with net neutrality. Net neutrality is just government regulations on the internet and the government being the ones controlling the internet instead of the free market. Mike Figueredo on the Humanist Report, he's huge on that. Oh, there's got to have that regulation on there. Cannot let the companies do anything about it. Can't let them have free reign. Can't let them compete in the free market. People won't have internet. And I even told them on there, I don't want to get too far afield here, but this goes with the example of healthcare here. I told them that my company that I have, Service Electric Cable Television, had tiers in place already before net neutrality came in place. They never went away, and they're still there. If I want a certain amount of bandwidth a month, I have to pay more for that. And I had quite a few comments on there. I think it was on the Twitter feed. I'll have to go back and look at it. I had comments on there about that, and it might have even been a YouTube video or both, because I comment on both, that's illegal. And I said, but I'm using more of the resource. I should have to pay more for my use. And they said, no, that's what net neutrality is supposed to take out. It's same amount. And I'm like, you guys are just unreal. You know, so what you're saying is, I need 30 gallons of gasoline a week to go back and forth to work. But we want gasoline neutrality, which means whether I buy 1 gallon or I buy 30 gallons, I pay a set price. And they looked at me like, what are you talking about? This is, you know, that's no comparison. Exactly. It's an orange to orange, apple to apples comparison. I use more of a resource. I should have to pay more for that. And it's just, and I don't get throttled. And that was Service Electric. They put a note out years ago about that, you know, like back in 2013 or 14 about that, that they said they set all these tiers up and there will not be any throttling. But when I watch Netflix or I watch other online services, because I don't have cable TV, I use up bandwidth per month. And sometimes I get a notice in the last 2 or 3 days of the month that I'm up 3/4 of my bandwidth allotment for the month. And so I have to be responsible for my TV watching on the internet. And the same way with single payer. If you got single payer and the person isn't paying for it, they'll use as much as they can get away with. I'm not saying people shouldn't go to the doctors, and I'm not saying people shouldn't get medical care, but I've known people that in the past who were on welfare and had that government insurance, and they get a sniffle, and they're calling the ambulance instead of asking the next-door neighbor, because neither one of them drove. They lived out here in the country, out in Snydertown here. Neither one of them drove. Instead of asking their next door neighbor or somebody else, and a few of us said, I lived across the street at the time. I said, if you need to go in to the doctors or something like that, we can take you. But no, they called the ambulance, went into the emergency room, because the government was paying for it. Why be responsible with your decisions if you don't have to bear any of the consequences of it? You know, and folks, that's freedom and liberty. We make decisions all the time, and we should have to bear the consequences of it. What the social democrats want to do is take the responsibility away from the people and put it in the hands of the government. All they want is a bunch of sheeples that'll follow them. They don't want independent thinkers. They don't want individuals, especially sovereign individuals that know their place in a republic. They don't want that. They want a direct democracy where they can stir up the emotions of the mob, because the mob is never going to research. They're never going to take time out of their busy day from circus and bread to research anything, i.e. when you're on Facebook and you start hauling off and throwing accusations at me that are totally false that you could take 2 seconds to go and research. If you're that lazy, you're not even going to go research, see who I am. What makes you think that people are going to go research something that's a little bit more difficult, like healthcare or like universal jobs? This one here really gets my goat. Universal job plan. This is out of the nationalreview.com by David Harsanyi, posted April 27th of this year. Democrats' universal job plan would be a socialist disaster. No skills, no interest in learning, and no wish to look for work, and you're not bothered by bankrupting America. This plan is for you. Senator Bernie Sanders is set to announce a plan that guarantees every American who wants or needs one a lifetime government job paying at least $15 an hour with health insurance and other perks. The new progressive workforce will then, according to the Washington Post, build glorious projects throughout the United States aimed at addressing priorities such as infrastructure, caregiving, the environment, education, and other goals. It would be one thing if the nation's leading socialist and perhaps the most popular Democrat in the country were the only one interested in creating a state-run workforce to compete with the private sector. A number of other allegedly moderate Democrats and prospective presidential candidates, including Senators Kristen Gillibrand and Cory Booker, favor a universal job guarantee as well. It's rapidly becoming a mainstream idea. Bernie Sanders has no cost estimate on his guaranteed jobs plan. One imagines that a quixotic proposal such as this pulls quite well. I mean, who doesn't want everyone to have a job? You don't possess the skills that enable you to find productive work. You don't want to learn a new trade. You don't want to obtain a better education. You have no interest in moving to an area where your work might be in demand. You don't want to start your career with a lower wage, even if the long-term prospects of doing so might be worthwhile. Well, don't worry. The government's got an incentive-destroying job opportunity just for you. And if you've been fired for a poor work ethic or for stealing or for making women uncomfortable with your creepy behavior, fear not. Bernie's got your back. In the rare event that the state workers do misbehave, they would be summoned to a Division of Progress investigation, a relic of our 1930s stab at socialism, to take disciplinary action if needed. If the DPI were to run anything like major public school systems, you can imagine it would be a study in mediocrity. Job guarantee advocates, the Washington Post says, makes the absurd claim that Sanders' plan would drive up wages by significantly increasing competition for workers, ensuring that corporations have to offer more generous salaries and benefits if they want to keep their employees from working for the government. Corporations are concerned with profit. If the minimum wage kills jobs, why should we believe that businesses, especially smaller ones, would compete with government-funded projects that can print money and create salaries and benefits that are wholly untethered from the real cost of labor? Businesses would simply hire fewer Americans, especially those Americans first getting into the labor force. Of course, it's more likely that our state-run workforce would be deployed for ideological and political priorities rather than economic ones. If history is any indicator, it would be used to prop up politically useful projects and keep failing industries afloat, undermining creative destruction, innovation, and long-term growth. No doubt the Washington, D.C. bureaucracy that would emerge to run this project would be both nimble and competent. I bet you he wrote that one tongue-in-cheek there, folks. You do have to wonder what would happen if local communities that share President Trump's priorities were to demand utilizing this state labor. What if they wanted to build sections of a wall on the southern border rather than make solar panels or whatever progressive priority Sanders has in mind? We'd be hearing about the rise of fascism in no time. Then there's the mission creep. No doubt the Washington, D.C. bureaucracy that would emerge to run this project would be both nimble and competent. But why only $15 an hour? Who can live on $15 an hour? Well, not a lot of people. Surely these hardworking public servants who keep the infrastructure from crumbling around us deserve a genuine living wage. How about better pensions? As this workforce grows, it wouldn't possess any special ability other than being able to corral huge numbers of people to demand more. Most of all, making government responsible for every American's job prospects would change the dynamics of governance forever. Not only would politicians be expected to help create the economic conditions that make growth possible, they would then face another unrealistic expectation. Unemployment would no longer be a function of economic conditions, but rather heartless politicians who fail to create jobs for voters. This is exactly what is wanted by the left-leaning economists who obsess about inequality and push zero-sum fantasies about wealth and growth. It's why they wanted the federal government to control the structure of the healthcare system, and it's why they want to create a public job option. Most of them openly argue that the universal job program would let them control wages and benefits in the private sector. Democrats have yet to tell us how they plan to fund this massive workforce idea that doesn't generate any profits. I have a strong suspicion it'll have something to do with the nefariously wealthy not paying their fair share. I'm not sure, however, that even the Koch brothers could afford to bankroll this idea, but it's not really meant to pass. Not yet. Republicans will never go for it, after all. Democrats see this as a promising campaign issue. In the meantime, they continue to normalize destructive socialist ideas in political discourse. And this is where, folks, this is one of these things that the lamestream media used to do. This is one of the things they used to do. They used to fight against this kind of stuff, actually expose this to the light of day and show you how silly it is. Huh? What are you going to do, have a bunch of just ditch diggers? And at $15 an hour, do you think these folks, men or women, are going to stand out their infrastructure? Let's say just building roads. Do you think at $15 an hour, these people are actually going to stand out there in the heat or in the cold or whatever and do that type of work for $15 an hour? You're crazy. I mean, you are totally crazy. And to divorce the profit incentive away from job creation. See, social Democrats, they are Marxist to the core. They are totally Marxist. Unions, trade unions, workers' unions, doesn't matter. They're socialists, Marxists at the core. They believe that capitalists are evil because they make so much more money. I got so many video ideas I want to do. I'm going to try to get into this weekend and this week. There's an article I was reading about this, where people still complain about how these CEOs make so much. And me and my son got in a discussion about that. Oh, it's not right that CEOs make so much money. I says, well, wait a minute. I said, let's back up a second. I said, and this goes right along with this job thing is. Do you think basketball players, football players, baseball players, professional sports in general, do you think they make too much money? No. Yeah, and my son was like, he was honest about it. I said, no, I don't. I said, why don't you think they make too much money? He says, because there's only a handful of them that can perform at that level. And I said, you're right. There's only a handful of them that can perform at that level so they can demand a higher wage. I said, how many people do you know? Because he talks about how he can do things better than management can do. He works for a railroad company. I said, how many people do you know can run? And I said, we'll just keep the number small, a Fortune 500 company. Do you think anybody in, so you pick out whatever company. Do you think the person working at at a labor job in that company, do you think he can go straight from there and be the CEO and run that company profitably? Well, no. Doesn't have the experience, doesn't have the knowledge. I said, exactly. I said, how many people have the drive to work their way up, to learn the business from the ground up, and go for that CEO job? How many people do you think there are? I said, it has to be a limited pool. And if it's a limited pool, guess what the board of directors are going to do to try to keep their companies profitable? They're going to hire the best people they can. They're going to hire the best CEO, and they're going to make sure that he's hiring the best CFOs and COOs and all that kind of stuff, you know, his subordinates, to make the company profitable and to make decisions to keep the company moving in a profitable area or in a profitable direction. I said, there's only, out of all the companies in the world, or let's say, let's keep it to the United States, there's only a handful of CEOs that are at the top of their game. And shouldn't they be compensated for that? I mean, for my goodness, they have the weight of a corporation on their shoulders. And is a board of directors going to hire a bad one every now and then? Yeah, they are. And my son said, well, they still get a golden parachute. And I said, that's because they negotiated ahead of time. If you hire me, this is what I want if you're going to sever me before a certain amount of time. Or if you're just going to fire me altogether, I get so much severance and this is the package. And the board of directors either agrees or doesn't agree. It's up to, and I said, are they doing anything illegal by doing that? And he couldn't answer me. He wouldn't answer me. I said, no, they're not doing anything illegal. Come on, it's common sense. They negotiated a contract. This universal jobs plan. It sounds good when you hear it, but when you get it down on paper and start really asking the tough questions, what the mainstream media isn't doing, you see that it's just a socialist utopia that can never be obtained. Again, what are you going to have all these people doing? And who's going to pay for it? How much is it going to cost? Well, they won't say. They can't say. And $15 an hour is not a living wage, you know, what they're talking about. That's only the beginning, folks. If they actually got this off the ground, which I'm predicting they wouldn't, but if they got this off the ground, $15 an hour is just a starting point. Pretty soon they're going to talk about $20, $25 an hour. And they're going to have to tax more of what people have. And what's that going to do? It's going to make more things scarce. And the scarcer things get, the more it costs. There's a vicious cycle there. The government, again, the federal government has no constitutional authority to create a universal job plan. I don't care what article in Section 8, what clause you're talking about. Even the Commerce Clause does not give them that power. This is a socialist dream of Bernie Sanders. And again, it's 180 degrees out from freedom and liberty. Why should private companies and corporations compete against the government for workers? It should be the other way around. The government should be competing against the private sector to get enough people to work in the government. But we have everything's topsy-turvy in this country. It really is. All right. Couple things I want to go over real quick here in quick succession. We're not going to spend a lot of time on. I have this Forbes article posted on, and this is back in February 18th of this year. No one mentions the Russian trail that leads to Democratic lobbyists. It's got very little play in the lamestream media. The new Main Street media is trying to get it out there and still doesn't have a lot of play in it. But all the investigations that Mueller has been doing, everything is pointing towards the Democrats. Matter of fact, I was reading an article the other day, and so their grand jury, whatever, or as a special prosecutor, he's sending down indictments of some of these Russian companies. Come to find out, these companies didn't exist. Now, you think after all the millions of dollars, of taxpayer dollars, that were given to him to investigate, he'd have some investigators that look into this before indictments have been passed down. And again, nothing has come about of this special investigation except things leading back and pointing to Democrats. Now, Judicial Watch, and this is something that was just breaking yesterday, and I didn't have a lot of time to research it. But they think the AG and some of their investigators, not the attorney general, but the the general counsel in some of these bureaucracies that actually investigate the bureaucracies, make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, is actually referring some of these allegations on Clinton, Hillary, and some other Democrats in the Obama administration for criminal investigation and indictment. And they brought back up the email server. They brought back up the Uranium One. And I think if they keep going backwards throughout all this, they're going to have to bring up Benghazi and the culpability of the Obama administration in that fiasco and other things that happened during the Obama administration, like Fast and Furious, that was never investigated, never prosecuted like it should have been. That Fast and Furious was an impeachable offense for President Obama, but people just turn a blind eye, and people are afraid that the same thing's going to happen with Hillary and everything. This is another one, and all these are going to be on my show notes page for today's show. And again, today's show is episode 982, if that's where you're looking at it. The DACA myth, what Americans need to know. And this is by the Foundation for American Immigration Reform, posted on October 16th of last year. And I know I talked about this before. I just wanted to bring this up again because immigration's been in the news, you know, about what's happening on the border, MS-13, the talks that President Trump is having with these. There's a PDF here. You can go read the full report. This story here, and the link will be in the show notes page again over at thedanclementsshow.com, talks about how the vast majority of these DACA recipients, the DREAM Act recipients, came over here either in their preteens or in their early teens with their parents. Very few came over as infants or toddlers. And that's a very important distinction, because the lamestream media would have you believe every one of these dreamers came over as babies. And no way can they be sent back to their country of origin, because they'd be out of, like a fish out of water. They don't know how to speak the language, which is a bunch of bunk. By the time you reach your late, you know, tweens, your mid to late tweens, you should know that language, your home language, pretty good. And chances are you have relatives already down, still back in the home country, that weren't going to try to do that trek across the desert and the southern border of the United States. So there's a lot of things going on in the DACA argument that people don't know about, and a lot of it are myths. The gentleman up in Michigan that the progressives were just whining and snotting about. Here he's a drug dealer. Turned out the reason why they're deporting him, because he was a drug dealer. But then it didn't bother to tell you that in the lamestream media. And that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem in our country, with the lamestream media are not telling you the truth. Talking about border walls. Hungary's multiple layer border wall. And I read this and I'm like, yes. This is by Lou Rockwell over at lourockwell.com. And he posted this yesterday. It's well known that Hungary put up a border fence, but how does it really work to keep migrants out? It appears to be a multi-layer border fence stopping illegal immigration to the country almost totally. The legal framework is nothing short of astounding. Basically, what they're doing down at this wall is, when the immigrants hit this outside wall, they're not allowed to come any further, and they're adjudicated at that wall. They're not allowed to come in the country and go to a court in Hungary to be adjudicated. It happens on the fence on outside of Hungary's nation, outside the border. It happens right on the fence. The courts in Hungary, the immigrants are still outside of Hungary. That's how they do that. And it's such an arduous progress to go through. The immigrants head for another country. They don't want to even try to get into Hungary. And again, that's what we should be doing. We should put a win. I ought to make a cartoon about this. They should put a drive-through window or a walk-up window at the wall with an air-conditioned office on the American side of the wall. And if you want asylum, that's where you have to apply for it, and that's where it gets adjudicated. You apply for it at one window, and then you come up to another window and get adjudicated. It's that simple. And that way, if your asylum request is found not to be worthy of asylum, we have no more responsibility for you. You can't come into the country. You're not already in here. You're still on foreign soil. I think that would be the best. Can you imagine the Democrats and the progressives and the humanists if that's something that happened? As a matter of fact, I think we ought to make that a request to Donald Trump. You know, I should send an email or a tweet to Donald Trump saying, hey, need to put a drive-up window down on the southern border on some of these heavy crossings so they can come up to the window and apply for asylum and get adjudicated right there so they never step foot on American soil. That would stop a lot of the illegal border crossings. I still think we need a physical barrier across our southern border. And where it's not feasible to put a physical barrier, they should tighten it up with electronics so hard that they can't come across. But this is another thing that keeps going on. But Hungary's got it right. Hungary's not letting them in. Poland has never let the refugees in, the illegal immigrants, into their country. And guess who's not having problems over there in Europe? Poland. Poland and Hungary are having the least amount of problems. And getting back to this Hungary border wall, the legislature passed a law saying that non-government organizations, NGOs, that are not native to Hungary, it's illegal for them to finance campaigns and stuff like that to influence the country. I.e., and they cited George Soros. George Soros has been the biggest thorn in the side of Hungary's government that there ever has been. And he passed a law saying he can't spend his money in Hungary to influence politics. Basically, you know, just I'm paraphrasing there, but basically I thought, man, that's great. Matter of fact, the funny thing about it was George Soros had to close up shop there, and guess where he went? And in my opinion, he's gone full circle. Went back to Germany. He went to Germany. And a lot of people don't know this about George Soros. He was in, as some of the pictures I've seen and some of the stories I read suggested, that he was in the lower levels of the SS. I don't know why he's still walking around free. I really don't. Other than he has enough money to keep his freedom. All right, just a couple, two more things here. I'll tell you what, let's leave this to the last because I want to get into this first. Some of the events that unfolded this week, President Trump, United States, moved the embassy and recognized Jerusalem and moved the embassy there as the capital of Israel. The Palestinians what they call the occupied territory of Palestine, they were up in arms about it and they were rushing the fences with Molotov cocktails and bombs, burning tires. There was a guy was taking a video trying to go. It wasn't a physical barrier. There were some like Humvees with IDF soldiers standing there. And he was literally saying, shoot us. And they were telling him, stay away from the border. And he was pushing his son. It was like 5 years old that was waving the Palestinian flag and pushing him up. Or go ahead and shoot him, he said. The father's saying this. Go ahead and shoot him. You can hear it on the video. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And you know what the IDF soldier did? When the kid got up to him, he sort of bent over and started talking, put his hand on his shoulder, and started talking to him. He's probably what he was telling him is your dad's a moron. And there's other pictures that got out where these little kids are 5, 10 years old that were strapped with bombs. If the IDF forces would have shot them, the bombs would have went off. It's unreal. And the thing is, the lamestream media and everybody's up in arms about all these poor Palestinians are being massacred. That's what we're calling it, a massacre over there. And the Human Rights Council is in special session for Israel violence. And this was posted on 5/15. Over in Geneva, the 47 member states of the UN Human Rights Council will hold a special session on Friday to debate the deteriorating human rights situation in the occupied Palestinian territory, the UN said on Tuesday. They were holding it today, so I don't have anything about it. I'll try to get a video out next week about this. The special session is being convened per an official request submitted this evening by Palestinian and the United Arab Emirates on behalf of the Arab groups of states, which has been supported by 26 states thus far, the UN Human Rights Office said in an email statement. The special session is the first since Council considered the situation in Myanmar in December 2017. Reporting is by Tom Miles, editing the by Hugh Larson. This is by a Reuters article. Now, if you go over and look and see who's on current membership, as of January 31st, or January 1st to December 31st, 2018, Afghanistan, Angola, Australia, Belgium, Brazil, Burundi, Chile, China, Cote d'Ivoire, Croatia, Cuba, Democratic Republic of Congo, Ecuador, Egypt, Ethiopia, Georgia, Germany, Hungary, Iraq, Japan, Kenya, Kyrgyzstan, Mexico, Mongolia, Nepal, Nigeria, Pakistan, Panama, Peru, Philippines, Qatar, Republic of Korea, that'd be North Korea, ROK, Rwanda, Saudi Arabia, one of the worst sponsors of terrorists, and yet there are buddies, United States. I'll never understand that at all. Senegal, Slovakia, Slovenia, South Africa, Spain, Switzerland, Togo, Tunisia, Ukraine, United Arab Emirates, United Kingdom, United States, and Venezuela. Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. There are more than a handful of these folks on the Human Rights Council that are state sponsors of terrorists. As far as I'm concerned, they have that council has no legitimacy because I believe Saudi Arabia is chairing that. It's ridiculous what's going on over there. Honestly, we shouldn't be over there. Europe, we pulled out of the Iranian deal. Europe says, well, we're not going to allow the United States to dictate terms of our dealing with Iran. And the same thing happened to Cuba. We put the embargo on Cuba, and a lot of other countries just ignored it. So what good did it do? And the same way with Iran. And I don't trust Netanyahu as far as I could throw him. Because years ago, he was found to lie about a lot of things with Iran. I'm not saying Iran's a good actor in all this, or a faithful actor in all this, but I don't trust Netanyahu. I don't trust Israel's Knesset or anything. The hardliners over, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. I don't trust our government as far as I can throw them. And I know I'm going a little long here, but the final issue today, this is just an update. I shared this with you months and months ago. This is Judicial Watch posted back in December 13th of last year. Sues California and Los Angeles over dirty voter registration rules. Now, I went and inquired about this, and there's still not an update. It's still going through the court process. The suit is still working its way through the court system. They're filing motions and stuff like that. And they said as soon as they get some movement on this, they'll put an update out. I get their emails and stuff, their email updates on this. So hopefully it won't be too much longer. But this sort of goes along with what I was talking about in my monologue about the popular vote. There are enough votes in these 11 counties. 11 of California's 58 counties have registration rates exceeding 100% of the age-eligible citizenry. Of all 11 counties, 10 Democrat, 1 Republican, of everybody that's over the amount of people that live in those counties that are eligible for voting is more than 5 million votes. And Hillary only won the popular vote by 3 million. Now, I'm not saying all these votes would either go to Trump or anything, but you can bet your bottom dollar that most of those votes in those 11 or in the 10 Democrat counties were probably voting for Hillary. And what Judicial Watch is trying to do, they're trying to get the voter rolls and they're trying to force these counties to clean them up. And they're suing to do this. And if they get them cleaned up and they get these votes off the rolls that are either illegal or non-existent at all, which would still be illegal, and get that margin down, then this popular vote argument goes away. Of course, they're going to say that the Republicans are playing games with this and everything, and that, you know, we're not following the law, or it's not right. You know, they may not use that not following the law, but they're saying, well, that's not right. You're disenfranchising people. It's just the same dumb argument about voter IDs. You need an ID to do almost everything, but they say it's discriminatory against minorities, especially blacks, to ask them to get an ID, a photo ID to vote with. And to me, that's condescending to the black community. Because I've seen video after video where they talked about this. I actually went into some inner cities like New York, and New York was the last one I remember, but I believe Los Angeles and some big cities down south. And they asked these black people, said, do you have a photo ID? And they showed it. They said, yeah, I got a driver's license. I drive all the time. You know, and they asked them about voter ID laws and stuff like that. Do you have a problem showing that? No. Do you have a problem getting it? Well, no. Do you know where the DMV is? Oh, this DMV is just over here a couple blocks, the one up in New York City said. So it's very, Let America Vote is the leading, and they're a George Soros-funded organization. They're leading the charge on this voter ID is voter suppression. Without any proof. Again, it's just bald-faced lies that can be easily disputed. Yet they're still perpetrating them, and I get after them. They're really hitting New Hampshire hard about the Republican bill about domicile laws with college students. And they're saying that they're trying to disenfranchise voters. I said they're not residents of the state of New Hampshire. If they're not residents, they're not eligible to vote there. And that's what the law is saying. The law is clarifying the law. The new law that they're passing is clarifying the law, saying if you're a college student and you don't place residence here, if you have like a home of record like we used to have in the military, my home of record was wherever my mom lived, then you're not eligible to vote here. And Let America Vote, so that's like the Republicans are trying to steal the vote up, or they're suppressing the vote. And it's like, no, they're trying to make sure the law is being followed. You are not a resident of that state. You have no business voting in that state, period. And this is why I'm thankful for people like Judicial Watch here. They're a nonprofit watchdog group in Washington, D.C., and they look at this stuff, and they have lawsuits all over the country about cleaning up the voter rolls. I mean, the National Voting Rights Act talks about it. It's in the act that they have to clean up the voter rolls. And this is what happened to Tom Healy in Ohio. He's running for, he's running, I think, for Congress as a representative. But anyway, he came out of the Marines, and he tried to vote, and he couldn't. They said there was a problem with your voting. You know, I think it was in a primary or something. There's a problem with your, you know, with it. And he cast a provisional ballot. Didn't do anything about it. Didn't go to the clerk of courts, or, you know, the wherever you go to register the voting board or whatever it is in your county. Didn't go there to try to rectify the situation. Came back to vote months later, like 6 to 8 months later in the general election, and was told he was having a problem with his registration, that he wasn't registered, and that he had to cast a provisional ballot. And he come to find out that he was cleaned off the voter rolls. And Ohio, they had record of it being sent, the letters being sent out. And he said, well, I was in the military over in Afghanistan. I didn't get anything. And I think they need to do a little bit something, tweak it for military people that are overseas. But he knew in the primary that there was an issue, and he didn't go. I even asked him in a tweet. I said, did you go and check this out? He told me no. He said they shouldn't have had to. I said, I'm sorry, but if they told you had a problem, why wouldn't you go down and see what the problem was? And if for some reason you were taken off the voter roll, how long would it take once you were there to get put back on the voter roll? Matter of fact, I just got my driver's license here in Pennsylvania renewed. And one of the things they ask you on there, matter of fact, I think two people ahead of me, a young lady, I think she was like 20 years old, I think she said. And the lady asked, are you registered to vote? And she goes, no, I never had time to go down there. Well, in Pennsylvania, you have motor voter register. And they asked her, you can register to vote here? And she goes, oh, great, I'll do that now. And so she did. And then they asked me about it. And I tried to go to the clerk of courts here that does the voting, takes care of the voter rolls, try to get changed on Republican. But I just never caught the office hours, and I changed my affiliate, my voting affiliate. I hadn't voted Republican in years except for local elections, but I was able to change it there. It was so easy, and I'm like, I got after him in the email. I said, you're a fraud. You know, he was on national TV. They were at, you know, they had a Supreme Court case about it that they lost. About cleaning up the voter rolls and stuff like that. The Supreme Court says there, you know, Ohio did nothing wrong with all that. And anyway, I called him a fraud. I said, "You are a fraud. You're being used by Let America Vote, and you're not being truthful." Oh, he got mad at me. He let loose a couple things on me, and I'm like, I calls him as I sees him. And here you got this guy that was totally being dishonest running for Congress. I mean, I guess in our day and age, I guess that's a prerequisite to become a congressman or senator or politician in Washington, D.C. You got to be dishonest. I'm not saying everybody in D.C. is dishonest, but he's registered Democrat, and he's already shown his true colors. So to be a registered Democrat and run for Democrat position in the government, you got to be dishonest. That's one of the prerequisites. And Judicial Watch is just trying to make sure that our voter rolls are clean enough that we're, you know, they get rid of the dishonesty. And there's not enough being done. There's just not enough being done at the state level to make sure that the voter rolls are being kept clean. There just isn't. And that's, it's fundamental to keeping the vote accurate. And if these states were actually doing their jobs, I mean, I don't know what these people that work at the state level that actually take care of the voter rolls and stuff like that. I don't know what their job is between elections. They must be so busy they can't do anything else. And we have computers today, and they have phones. They can try to get a hold of these people and say, hey, you know, there's a problem here. Do you still live here? You know, yada yada yada, or you know, do something to clean up these rolls. That was my one question. I still ain't found that question, that answer out to that yet. What are these folks that work in the voting, whatever it is, and at the county level, what do they do all year? Certainly, they have enough time between elections to go over the voting rolls and see who had. First off, go over the rolls and see who just hasn't voted in. You know. In Pennsylvania, if you haven't voted in like two primaries or two general elections back to back, you're in danger of being taken off the rolls. And I think it's after, if you haven't voted in three, then they can take you off the roll. And if they just go through and get rid of at least those. And if a person finds out when they try to go to vote and they say, well, you're not on here, you can cast a provisional ballot. They still allow you to vote. It's just provisional. And then go take care of it. Then go take care of it. Don't be like Tom Healey and don't take care of it. And then whine about it at the national level on national TV, calling the Ohio State Attorney General, calling him all sorts of names because you refused to do something you should have done. And again, I don't want to cast aspersions, but I kind of wonder what kind of a he was an officer in the Marines. I just wonder what kind of officer he was, if he was acting this way. It boggles my imagination that there's people out here that want to do that, that just continue to play the victim. And I'm with Candace Owen and Kanye West. I'm never a victim, and I never want to play a victim. I really don't. And that's, again, that's something that we have to take care of also. And, I might do a show on just victimhood, because I got a lot to say about that also. Well, folks, that's the music. That's the end of the show. Appreciate you being with me. I appreciate folks that left comments in the comment area. Please, if you like what I'm doing here, subscribe to the show and make sure you hit the notification button so you know when I put new videos out. Give me a thumbs up or thumbs down. Please leave your comments, positive or negative. They won't hurt my feelings. Share my videos. Please, I appreciate it when people share my videos. And if you really like what I'm doing here and you want to support me, because I do need support, I have a Patreon account and I also have a PayPal account. And that's the other thing with the Streamlabs OBS. I'm going to be able to set some things up in there where you can click a button in the live stream that I'm doing and go right there and do the donation during the live stream. I'm looking forward to being able to do that through OBS. This has been the Dan Clements Show. I'm your host, Dan Clements, your constitutional warrior. Remember, if you aim at nothing, you hit it every time. Have a great rest of the day, and God bless, and we'll see you on the next video.